Tell me, what kind of person are you? Have you studied a little psychology, different temperaments? By the way, the best thing to do is accept one another, because we are different, and it's heaven on earth. If you accept your wife as she is, and ladies, if you accept your husband as he is. So what kind of person are you? Relaxed, happy-go-lucky, easygoing? Man, I envy these people. Or are you restless? Workaholic? Go-getter? Melancholic? In my research on the life of Nebuchadnezzar, I'm flabbergasted at what he accomplished. And I was wondering, what type of personality did Nebuchadnezzar had? What else besides bathers are in the ocean here at Tyre? It's not far from Israel, the border. You know, I don't think Nebuchadnezzar spent much time in swimming during his 13 years when he laid siege to Tyre, because he was a workaholic. If you look at all the Ibabar temples he restored in ancient Sumer, you'll be surprised. I don't know where the man got the time from. Now, not far from Tyre, the place called Sidon, you can visit this interesting temple, the Echmun Temple. In ancient times, it was a place of healing, and people came all over the Levant, the Middle East, to come here for healing. By the way, there's only one place for spiritual healing. That is by the great spiritual healer. And he's got to heal us every day, because we become so sick so quickly. Nebuchadnezzar was also here, and he erected the ziggurat, the first building you see here. It's half the size of the one at the back. Let's depart from here and recall the dream he had in Babylon, because it fits in with what we see here. By which metal was he represented in the dream of Daniel? Those of you that studied the history of the book of Daniel would tell us the gold, the top, the best. Who would appear after the bear with the three ribs? Now, you first have the lion that represents Babylon. Then you get the bear with the three ribs. And after the bear with the three ribs, you get the leopard with the four wings and the four heads. By the way, Daniel 2 and 7 complement one another. Daniel 3 and 6 complement one another. And 4 and 5 complements one another. A beautiful structure in the book of Daniel. But which of the four beasts would you identify Nebuchadnezzar? The lion, the leopard with its four wings and four heads, Medo-Persia, and then we go down the line. Cyrus, the silver of the image, the bear of the four beasts, built this huge podium next to the ziggurat of Nebuchadnezzar. Did he fulfill the Tyre of prophecy? No. He had to wait for two civilizations. Only they fulfilled this prophecy. Who would appear after the bear with three ribs? The leopard with the four wings, four heads. With which metal would you associate the Greeks in this image? Babylon, gold. Medo-Persian, silver. Medo-Persian, two arms. Then the Greeks, one. Alexander the Great. Will we find evidences of Greek presence here? Because we've got the Babylonians here, we've got the Medo-Persians here. Let's see if we find runes from the Greek period. After the Persians, we get the Greek presence here. And here you see the archaeology. So you've got Babylon here, Medo-Persia, and Greece, the third kingdom. Now, during the Hellenistic period, the sanctuary was extended from the base of the podium across the valley. So the Greeks really displayed many of their artwork, runes, etc. You identify these runes when you study the architecture. Who would appear after the leopard with its four wings and heads? That funny looking creature with 10 horns. So here you've got four kingdoms in prophecy, and we're going to see how all four are represented at Ekmon. By which metal would you place the Greeks here? The bronze, the copper, and after that you get the Romans. Now if Ekmon could give us the presence of Rome, we have it in prophecy, we will have the four metals of the image, four beasts, and then we'll have it in archaeology. What do you see down there? There's a road, and on the other side of the road to the left, there is something which I want to show you. You know, I was so excited when I came across this ancient Roman cardu, Roman road. It was beautiful at night. They had lights on top of these columns. Beautiful streets. You have one in Jerusalem as well. Now, here we've got four kingdoms. Ekmon confirms the four empires as presented in Daniel in vision, chapter 2 and 7. At one place, I was so excited when I discovered this. A professor showed me two, and during my subsequent visits, I noticed that the Greeks were here, the Romans were here. Where do you see Rome in the four beasts? This last one with the 10 horns. The leopard with its four wings and four heads, and then Rome right at the bottom. Which metal represents the Roman Empire? The legs of iron. Loretta and I went to look for the four beasts of Daniel and found it at Nuremberg in Germany. She's just standing below it. There you've got Nebuchadnezzar, head of gold with the lion next to him. There you've got Cyrus the Great with a bear, three ribs. Loretta says, this is nothing, let's go and see what's on the other side. This is what we saw. Alexander the Great with a leopard with the four heads, four wings. And then on the other side, the Roman Empire with a beast, feet of clay and iron. What does that represent? I like something that I found in my research, a description of iron and clay. The author says the clay stands for churchcraft, and the iron stands for statecraft, because the black is Rome, and clay in Bible always has a religious connotation. While visiting here in 2018, the archaeologist told me something very interesting, very exciting. You know, when I discover these things, I cannot tell you how my heart is strangely warmed. They excavated mosaic from the Byzantine period. That is the early Christian church. The mosaic excavations were made next to the Roman cardu. So next to the feet, we also have a Roman cardu. So there, here you've got the iron in the feet. You know, I found myself on the symbolic iron and clay of Daniel 2 when I walked here. So here you've got churchcraft and statecraft next to one another. Where am I pointing to? I'm pointing to the Roman cardu. That's the iron in the feet of the image. And in front of me, I'm looking at mosaic from the Byzantine period, the church. So I'm standing here at the feet of iron and clay. I was so excited. You know, God is so good. He gives us prophecy. in stone as well. Revelation 17 tells us more about the role of the church, the clay, and the state, iron, before the second coming of Jesus. This is another series that I hope could be presented to you before I lay down my head and rest a while waiting for the second coming. We have seen the footsteps of Nebuchadnezzar in Tyre. We see it here at Echmon. Let's look for a third evidence. Runes of the Nar al-Kalb. Nar in Arabic is river. Kalb is dog. So the geography here looks like a dog looking into the sea. That's why they call it Nar al-Kalb. Now, long before the existence of internet, I read about Nebuchadnezzar who left inscriptions here at Nar al-Kalb. You know, you young people are so fortunate, you just press a few buttons and you get all the information. We old people had to work through volumes and volumes and volumes. Let's use the internet carefully. During all my visits to Lebanon, I tried to find the place where Nebuchadnezzar left some of his inscriptions. But in vain. They're always warring against one another, or making war with Israel and Hezbollah. I lived at the university there, and you could hear the bombs above your dormitory at times. And one night, the Israelis came with their jets, and when they go through the sound barrier, it's like a shoo, like an earthquake. So they couldn't spend much time on precious archaeology. Let's ascend these steps. I've ascended it so many times. You know, one of the poets says, the heights by great men reached and kept were not attained by sudden flights, but they were their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night. And if you want to have a little success in life, you'll have to put in everything. So this lady at the back here, she tries to do her best. There's another lady in front of her, and I'm waiting on top for them to come up. Come on, ladies. While I looked there, I couldn't find anything. They told me that I should go down here. I'm pointing to the side of the river, and then I'll find the inscription. Yeah, that was hard work. I've been there quite a few times. In 2019, 18, I was here again. Let's descend. You know, the book of Proverbs says two is better than one. This young man had to help me to get down. Two is better than one. If one falls, the other one can pick him up. One of life's biggest joys is helping someone else. You'll always find somebody that needs you. Help that person. Paul says in 1 Corinthians 13, love seeks not her own. God's love seeks the needs of the other person and helps us to serve them. I was trying to catch up with the rest of the team. I'm right at the back here. This was in 2018. Look at the vegetation here. Come, come, come. Let's go. And this man's daughter is helping him. And this is the late one. Look at this. Searching for that. I've been there, but you know, there's such a lot of bushes, you don't know where to go. You cannot see your direction. Anyway, after removing all the obstructions, we stood for a moment in awe. Can you see the mighty Nebuchadnezzar standing here, telling his scribes what to write here? My heart was strangely warmed. one of my first evidences in Lebanon that there was a Nebuchadnezzar. Hear the stones cry out. You can believe the Bible. My dear friend, every time I visit here, I thank God for the marvelous, reliable book, the Bible. No matter where you read, it's inspired. It changes a person's life. We departed from the beautiful city of Beirut, and we traveled north to the most inscriptions, the most important one of the four inscriptions. We've just been to Nahr el-Kelp inscription. Now we're going to Wadi Kelt, Wadi Briza, and two more less important ones. I had to stop at the Cedars of Lebanon. This is such an historic site. There are not many left. The French government is protecting part of this area. Now, this is where Nebuchadnezzar received his expensive cedar wood. He would come here. So we're still walking on the footsteps of Nebuchadnezzar. What you see here, he saw. The most beautiful and the most expensive wood in ancient times and modern times. And by the way, Nebuchadnezzar regarded them as symbols of eternity. Symbols of eternity. That's why he used it in his palaces. By the way, Solomon also came here to get some of this precious wood. When lightning struck this cedar tree, a sculptor called Rudi Rachme gave it new value. He worked with chisels and produced 75 images in this dead tree. Let's allow Jesus, the great sculptor, to give us a new identity after we have been struck by life's tragedies. We all have them, but he is a restorer. Rudi Rachme changed this ugliest stump into the most precious symbol. Can you see it? We got lost in our search for Wadi Briza, and we prayed, God, please help us to get to our destination. This was such an important endeavor, operation. Eventually, we met up with these helpful Lebanese farmers with their tractor, and we told them we're looking for Boom Boom, great inscriptions. What a moment when they directed us to Wadi Briza with its 1,400 lines of cuneiform script on both sides of this little road. On the western side, you see a man, and it's not very clear here, fighting with a lion, reminding one of the Lion of Babylon. Nebuchadnezzar, sometimes the tail was up, sometimes the tail was down when it's peace. The text is written in Old Babylonian. On the eastern side of the Wadi Briza, a man and a huge tree can be seen. And this is interesting. And people are sheltered under the tree. Cuneiform is New Babylonian. So he had the inscriptions in both languages, Old and New Babylonian, so that everybody could understand what he was trying to say. Why was a tree so important for the king? In Daniel chapter 4, he also mentions a dream of a huge tree giving protection and sustenance for the world. In 1906, a German by the name of Weisbach became the first translator of these inscriptions. But the tools did not allow him in those days to capture the entire script. You just have partial pieces. But then a lady, I wish it was a man. Men should be archaeologists. Rosia Tariva, that's her name, used new scientific methods, and today we have access to the entire script of 1,400 lines dictated by Nebuchadnezzar. He was a genius. I was so excited when I read line 15. By the way, you can get the translation of a book called The Twin Inscriptions. That's big. Nebuchadnezzar mentions in line 15 the fact that he erected a huge image in honor of himself. One color. Does this ring a bell? 1,400 lines in Old and New Babylonian cuneiform script so that everybody could get the message. And this was a place where people walked to and fro. So he was telling the world something here. Before looking at the dramatic revelation of the king on the rock, let's read Daniel chapter 3, because it ties in with what he wrote here. Nebuchadnezzar, the king, made an image of gold whose height was 60 cubits and the breadth thereof 6 cubits. He set it up in the plain of Dura in the province of Babylon. I was wondering, Dura, what does that mean? Where is it? It's in Babylon. It just speaks of two walls. Now, some of the translations use the number 666 in this. You get it in Revelation chapter 13, verse 18, I think. Then Nebuchadnezzar, the king, sent to gather together the princes. This is universal. The governors and the captains, the judges and the treasurers, the counselors, the sheriffs, and all the rulers of the provinces to come to the dedication of the image which Nebuchadnezzar the king had set up. Now here we have a universal decree forcing his staff, we've read the different titles, to come to this image. Can you see this vast group of celebrities? By the way, King Zedekiah from Jerusalem was also here. He was asked to be there. Then a herald cried out, "To you it is commanded, O peoples, nations, and languages." I love Hebrew parallelism. It says peoples, who are they? Nations, who are nations? Languages. You know, if you read carefully, the Bible explains itself. That at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, and symphony, another six. The measurements of the image is numerical 6. And now the music, 6. Very interesting. And this is also something that can be applied to the end times. We call it eschatology. Symphony with all its kinds of music, you shall fall down and worship the gold image that the king Nebuchadnezzar has set up. The music was an incentive. You know, music can mesmerize a person. So they had to do it. The incentive was when this huge orchestra started to play, fall down. And whoever does not fall down, I want to make it very clear, he says, and worship shall be cast immediately into the midst of the burning fire, so that at that time when all the people heard the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, in symphony with all kinds of music, all the people, nations and languages fell down and worshipped the gold image which King Nebuchadnezzar had set up. I was in Babylon recently, walking between two of these huge walls, and imagine what happened there. Therefore, at the time, certain Chaldeans came forward and accused the Jews. They spoke and said to King Nebuchadnezzar, "O king, live forever. Hypocrites. You, O king, have made a decree that everyone who hears the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, and psaltery in symphony with all kinds of music shall fall down and worship the gold image. And whoever does not fall down and worship shall be cast into the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Obey and live. Disobey and die. There are certain Jews whom you have set over the affairs of the province of Babylon. We think you've made a mistake, Your Majesty. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. These men, O king, have not paid due regard to you. That's not true. They do not serve your gods or worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar, in his rage and fury, commanded to bring Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Then they brought these men before the king. Now, if you are ready at the time you hear the sound of the horn, flute, harp, lyre, psaltery, in symphony, with all kinds of music, this must have been a tremendous affair. And you fall down and worship the image which I've made. Good. But if you do not worship, you shall be cast immediately in the midst of a burning fiery furnace. Who is the God? Listen to this. Who will deliver you from my hands? You know, it's a dangerous thing to challenge God. But God loved this man. Eventually, he converted. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego answered and said to the king, very politely, O Nebuchadnezzar. And they loved him. We have no need to answer you in this matter. If that is the case, our God whom we serve is able to deliver us from the burning fiery furnace. And he will deliver us from your hand, O king, very politely. You know, voice intonation is one of the greatest communicators. First of all, it's just written, and then voice intonation and body language. And we don't find this in just reading, but imagine these three God-fearing people speaking kindly to the king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we do not serve your gods, nor will we worship the gold image which you have set up. Then Nebuchadnezzar was full of fury, and the expression on his face changed towards Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. He spoke and commanded that the heat of the furnace, 7 times more than it was usually heated. It must have been difficult for him to proclaim this, because they were friends, they were special to him. He lost his image. Patience, I'm going to kill you. And he commanded certain mighty men, these were the strongest men in the empire, of valor, who were in his army, to bind, so they had robes around them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and cast them into the burning, fiery furnace. Then these men were bound in their coats, their trousers, their turbans, and their other garments, and were cast into the midst of the burning, fiery furnace. Now look at the clothing they had. Man, that flames would just burn them to ashes. Therefore, this is interesting, because the king's command was urgent and the furnace exceedingly hot, the flame of the fire killed those men who took up Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Those ovens, you had to put people in from the top, so that heat was so high that it killed the people who pushed them in. And these three men, I love them, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, fell down bound in the midst of the burning fiery furnace. Can you see them landing down below? They're not burnt. Then King Nebuchadnezzar was astonished. He rose in haste and spoke, saying to his counselors, "Hey, gentlemen, did we not cast three men bound into the midst of the fire?" They answered and said to the king, two, okay, yes, three, only three. What's going on here? Look, he answered. Can you see the expression on his face? Look, he answered. I see four men loose. Hey, loose. Where are the ropes? Walking in the midst of the fire. And they are not hurt. And the form of the fourth is like the Son of God. He recognized the Son of God. He saw him in chapter 2. He saw God in the lives of these people. And here their God descends to them in the fire. What a moment in the life of Nebuchadnezzar. Then Nebuchadnezzar went near the mouth of the burning fiery furnace and spoke, saying, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, servants of the Most High. What an acknowledgement. Come out and come here. Then Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego came from the midst of the fire. I think they turn to Jesus and say, thank you for visiting with us, but the king calls us. Will you excuse us? And Jesus disappeared. They exited the fiery furnace, walked to the king. And the satraps, administrators, governors, and the king's counselors gathered together. And they saw these men on whose bodies the fire had no power. They smelt them. They touched them. Took their fever. The hair of their head was not singed, nor were their garments affected, and the smell of fire was not on them. What a miracle. Nebuchadnezzar spoke, saying, blessed be the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who sent his angel messenger, to deliver his servants who trusted in him. And they have frustrated the king's word and yielded their bodies that they should not serve nor worship any god except their own God. What a test. You know, this was a great man. He could say, I'm sorry, I've made a mistake. Therefore, I make a decree. Listen to this. The first one was universal. The second one was also universal. That any person, nation or language, which speaks amiss against the God of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego shall be cut in pieces, and their houses shall be made an ash heap, because there is no other God who can deliver like this. Then the king promoted Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the province of Babylon. By the way, Abednego became the counselor of the son of Nebuchadnezzar after his death. And eventually, Daniel became his counselor as well. So, Abednego and these men, they portrayed something that influenced Evil Merodach. And there's another story coming up about him. Is this event mentioned in the Wadi Brisa inscriptions? Then I do not have to excuse to see the book of Daniel as a mythological and a mere legend. You know, when I was here, I took pictures. I took it to two of the universities where I studied. And I asked the professors, please, can you translate this for me? They couldn't. They couldn't. And then I got a gift. Finally thought this was a lady I knew. Annette, ancient Near Eastern text. And when I went through that, it's a thick one. All the translations of the inscriptions. And there I found this marvelous line. Let me read it to you. In order that nobody might do any harm to them, I erected there a st- clearly showing me as everlasting king of this region. Beside my statue as king, I wrote an inscription mentioning my name. I erected for posterity. I was so happy when I saw this. Nebuchadnezzar is not a myth. You can read about him in his own handwriting. Enuma Elish and the Gilgamesh epic of the creation of the flood story do not speak to my heart. These cruel, loveless gods fill me with fear. The Bible tells me of a loving God who cares for me as an individual. And you know, my friend, if you were the only person on this planet, Jesus would come down and die for you. As he descended to his dear children in the fiery furnace, so he too descends to me in my fires of affliction and saves me. My failures caused him to leave the glory of heaven to help me in my misery. We serve a condescending God to the fires of affliction in our lives. He does not want to destroy me. It's not in his character. Because of my many failures, he invites me to come and receive his pardon. Here in archaeology, a broken vase that's been repaired is worth more than the original intact one. Archaeology places value not so much on what it used to be, but about the restoration. And this is how God sees you and me. No matter what happened, he looks at the restoration he performs in my life. That gives him value. No matter how life has treated you, he's the great archaeologist that wants to put you together and put you in the display cabinet of the great library museum of eternity. He took upon himself my load of failures, my pain and my sin. This destroyed him, but his death save me. How does one cope with this kind of love in a world full of hatred and lovelessness? Loretta invites us for 1 second to visit the Wartburg castle where Luther translated the Bible in German. And the first book he published was the Book of Daniel. Luther says, this is where he translated the beautiful Book of Daniel. He says, when we stand before our loving, forgiving God, we become beautiful. What a message. Please join me as I come into his presence to become beautiful. Father in heaven, thank you for descending to my fiery furnaces in life. Help me to appreciate your love just a little more. Make me a little more loving, forgiving, and kind. In Jesus' name, amen.